This is SaaS Scaled, the podcast where data meets action with host Armon Shrocky. Each week, Armon will be sitting down with CEOs and industry leaders from the technology sector, giving you the insight to innovate without reinventing the wheel. They'll discuss challenges, best practices, and how to identify the right metrics. So if you want to get to market faster and in a way that matters, then subscribe and join us every week as we discuss SaaS Scale. This episode is brought to you by Curvey, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.
Hi, welcome to another episode of SaaS Scaled, and I'm here with Chris, a special guest because of his unique background. I had a discussion with him, and I know that, you know, he's coming from a very unique background as a product manager. Also, he brings a wealth of knowledge about security that everyone is concerned about or should be concerned about as a SaaS company. So we are going to have a great discussion. Chris, could you please introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about yourself and the company as well.
Yeah, thanks, Armon. So my name is Chris McHenry. I am Chief Product Officer at Aviatrix. We are a cloud native network security company, and I've been here for about 4 years. Started my career, actually, I've been in this kind of networking and network security space, and I know for a long time, most of my career, I started at Cisco and spent about 15 years there. I know it's an area that is sometimes under the radar for people. It's the things that just you hope that they kind of work, but they're also the things that when they don't work, they're a big problem. And so I am really, really passionate about around those core fundamental components that power our everyday digital lives. Started my career, I think, to your point around my interesting background, I started my career trained as an engineer, but started my career for a large portion of the first part of it in sales. And that combination between being a builder and a designer and a technology enthusiast, and then also spending thousands and thousands of hours with customers, really has brought, kind of combined those two things into my passion for product and product management and creating things that make a real difference for the customers that buy them.
Fantastic. Yeah, definitely. You know, as you told me before, when you're a product manager, you can build a great product when you know your customer well and you have that empathy with them. So that's very, very important. So that's a very good point. Now, tell us a little bit about the company that, you know, what the company does, what kind of market do you guys serve? Just we know that as a context of the discussion and your background.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are a B2B SaaS company. We do actually also have a self-managed offering. It's kind of interesting. So we've been through that transition from traditional software to SaaS, and that's been a core part of my tenure here. The space that we play in is really in that infrastructure and cybersecurity space. You can think about our core, our buyers are typically cloud platform teams, potentially CISO teams, CIO teams, not necessarily working with the app teams, not necessarily working with the business teams, but if our stuff doesn't work, then nothing works is kind of the core component of it. So it is a really exciting and important place to be in. But at a very high level, the thesis of the company has been that as organizations move to the cloud, which obviously is really relevant for so many of the listeners on this podcast, is we're building our SaaS offerings in the cloud, right? But as businesses have moved to the cloud, it fundamentally changes the way that we think about securing those applications. And so our core thesis was that, you know, when we think about some of those critical layers of security, if we don't reinvent them in the same way that we reinvent our applications when we deploy them in the cloud, we're going to be in serious trouble. And so what we do really is we've looked at some of those fundamental components The things that you might see from some of the core cybersecurity companies like a Palo Alto, or even, you know, where I came from, a Cisco or Fortinet, the infrastructure security oriented companies, what would that look like if I could redesign and reinvent that for the cloud? Because I fundamentally believe as more organizations adopt the cloud, if we don't have security right there, it powers so much of our society. As I mentioned beforehand, the core listeners on this podcast, I guarantee you 99% of them are operating in AWS, Azure, Google, Oracle, one of the cloud providers. Mm-hmm. If you think about the importance of those service providers to our economy right now, it is our responsibility to secure the applications that run on top of them. And we need the right tools. We need the right tools to align with the technology, with the foundational platform shifts. And actually, in many cases, more importantly, we need the right tools to align with the operational models of the cloud. How do I make it really friendly for your developers so that as a product team, because I see this tension all the time, it's really amazing. I'm a security professional. I'm super passionate about security. And I'm also frustrated when our engineering teams can't go faster. Right. And I see the tension in between those two things. It's, oh, no, we need to be conservative. Oh, no, we need to be aggressive. Right. If I can bridge the gap there and make it so that we can go fast and be secure, that's really like one of the core principles of the products that we build.
Great. And you mentioned a point that, you know, all of us probably can't even remember. That's not way long time ago. It's just less than, you know, five to 10 years ago, that people were very concerned about moving their data to public clouds. And they, you know, they had some hesitation there, right? So I don't want to really go to the cloud and put my data on AWS or some, because I'm just not sure about the security part of it. Today, I see some people arguing that actually that might be even more secure if you really move to AWS rather than run your own private cloud and host your own data. Now, we have you here, so you are the best person to answer that question. If you wanted to make a decision purely based on data security, nothing else, there is nothing else that matters. It's just number one priority. What would be your decision and your advice? Should I really create my private cloud and host my application there to make sure the maximum security? Or should I really go and just put my data on Azure or AWS or GCP?
Yeah, it's a super simple answer, honestly. no question, the data center is more secure. And the primary reason that's the case is because the thing that is most important to cybersecurity is that connection point between you and the internet. And when you have physical control over the physical space that your data actually lives in, there is a single cable between you and the internet, no question. Easier to secure. I've done a lot of presentations at security conferences in the past where I make some form of joke around like, hey, if you really want to secure yourself, cut the cable between you and the internet. And I know one of your topics you often discuss on the podcast is around like books or blog posts that are inspirational. I wasn't going to include this one, but there's a great story on a virus. It's probably about 10, 15 years old now, called Stuxnet. And it was a nation state attack that was primarily designed to disrupt the Iranian nuclear program. And it talks a lot about how difficult it is to actually attack something when it's not connected to the internet. So the summary is definitely more secure to have something in your physical control. That doesn't mean, though, that we can't effectively secure the cloud, right? And so I think that's where some of those nuances come in. We need to think about it. We need to take it very, very seriously. But the better way to frame that question is, can the cloud be secure? And the answer is yes. Yes, it can. But you need to take the right, you need to be very conscious about the controls that you put in place and the way that you configure it and the way that you secure it in order to achieve a comparable security posture to what you might have on-prem.
Yeah, and the other aspect of it is, even if you have your private cloud, if you need to run some of the other services that are not part of your private cloud, anyway, you have to open gate and reach out to those. Essentially, you are at the same kind of situation.
Yeah, Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think this is actually one of the most interesting things around how applications have really changed the way they work over the last 15 years. And so as a product team, right, I would be shocked if anybody in product has not been challenging themselves over the last 18 months to figure out what they're doing with AI. The vast majority of products that are going to be integrating AI into the product are not going to be doing local inference. They're going to be consuming a service from OpenAI or from Azure or from Google. So even if you have this on-prem product that you're still, you know, caring and feeding for, you're probably going to be using some form of third-party service in order to deliver the AI functionality in it. So applications, it's more of an inevitability. Right. It's that the question is such an interesting question, because what's happened with cloud is not a migration to a cloud. It's actually it's a fundamental reshaping of how applications are built. They're now hybrid. Some of them are as a service. Some of them aren't as a service. So we don't even in many cases have the choice to avoid thinking about cloud security. I think it's a mandatory requirement. And you need to put significantly more thought into it because it's so easy to expose those services to the internet in the cloud when you don't have that physicality anymore. But it's mandatory. Like, we can't avoid it. It's almost not even worth having the discussion anymore. We have to go embrace it and tackle the challenge and figure out how to make it ethically effective for our customers, serving our customers. Because I do see cybersecurity as an ethical responsibility.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, so especially if you're a SaaS company, that's the path you have chosen to really host your application on most likely, you know, one of these public clouds and then serve customers from there. It's at this point, it's not a question. It's just a matter of, you know, how seriously you have to really take that into account and, manage that process, be secure, essentially, right? So and then now we are, as you mentioned, we are in the new era. We are at this AI now comes to place, and a lot of discussions, not just about security, but data privacy and some other aspects of AI comes to place. Can you tell us what are the challenges that have been introduced from AI perspective in what you do, and what would you advise companies taking AI as a pragmatic approach that they can really go and still stay secure and, you know, be considerate about those drawbacks?
Yeah, great question. So we are in an interesting position from a product perspective, because I get to look at it from two lenses. I get to look at it from how can AI integrate with our product to help our buyer and our users as security professionals. Mm-hmm. And then I also get to think about how does our product secure AI? Because in many cases, organizations, especially if you're building a SaaS product, you're probably using, as I'd mentioned beforehand, a service from AWS or Azure, and those services are running in the cloud, and they're different services than they have different behavioral characteristics. They're different services than you've used in the past. I think there's also a lot of misinformation around, like, when is somebody training on your data versus when are they not? What are the potential for data leaks? And so I look at it from two different perspectives. Like, we need to capitalize on some of the amazing efficiencies and transformational features that we can deliver with AI, but also think about how our product is securing AI. So I'll tackle the first one first, because I think that it speaks a lot to our kind of my philosophy as a product leader. And that is that great products are grounded in a deep empathy for the customer. And so it matters, especially when we start to talk about agentic AI, when we start to think about how is AI driving exponentially greater operational efficiencies. You can only drive an operational efficiency if you really understand how your customer is operating. What are their processes? And in our space, you know, one of the core pieces that we focus on, one of the core frictions, it goes back to that tension between security and the expectations that developers have for speed. and basic things like being able to manage policies around who can access what in the environment. It's critically important as a security control. It's a massive amount of manual overhead. It has a lot of documentation requirements. Like if I'm going to go as a SaaS company and get my SOC 2 and get my ISO 27001, I need to be able to show that I have the appropriate controls in place. And that point there, right, that's one example of what is actually a pretty detailed flowchart and process that up until now was, you know, you could only automate so much, right? With AI, I think we can transform it, but it's anchored when we think about our agentic strategy in the product, it's always anchored in an understanding of how the human is operating from a day-to-day perspective. And what's funny about that is I have the UX team underneath me because I'm a big believer in user experience being such a critical part in terms of delivering the maximum value out of a product. And I see like my UX lead is now also leading a lot of our AI components because it's grounded in that user research. Mm-hmm. But the end state, I don't think in many cases is a chatbot. Now chatbots are kind of wrote them off early on, to be perfectly honest. They are getting way more interesting with MCP servers and the ability to pull in real-time data and all of that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, I want it to feel magical. And you as a user, the magic tricks only land when you think that something that just happened, when you really understand what it would have taken to have that thing happen. Right. It's like, oh my gosh, you just short circuited 90% of my work. Boom. Right. You have that magical moment. Right. So we're looking at those user workflows that are, that might be able to be transformed, but again, super, super grounded in the user experience. And you'll see some really cool. I mean, if you care about our domain, which, you know, I think every SaaS company has some level of caring about our domain. But if you care about our domain, I think you're going to see some really, really cool stuff from us on AI. Now, the flip side of that is how do you secure AI? Mm-hmm. And this is a really, really interesting question. Because one of the big differences between traditional applications and agentic AI applications is that traditional applications are predictable and they follow rules. And agentic AI applications are non-deterministic and you can give them guardrails, but they still might not behave in the way that you expect them to. And so it is even more important as we're developing AI applications to consider how we build those strict guardrails, specifically around like low-level controls, things like what is the identity of the agent? Mm-hmm. Multi-tenancy with agentic AI workflows is very problematic. It's like saying a user can log into multiple tenants. If you have an agentic AI workflow that has multi-tenancy fundamentally built into it, it will have the ability to bridge between two of the organizations that you consume. And so it completely reframes the way we think about building apps with multi-tenancy. Identity for AI agents is incredibly important, right? So there's some application architectures there. The ability to access things on the network, again, like what are the new attack vectors that agentic AI opens up, right? So good example is, you can think about AI agents a little bit like you think about humans. They can be socially engineered. So if I have if I have an AI chatbot that gives the user the ability to actually type into it, if the user puts in some malicious instructions, you actually now have an insider on your network because that agent sits inside of your application and sits on your network. It has the user could potentially hijack the agent based on social engineering, just like you would if you were taking over a developer's laptop. So we have to have compensating controls. We have to have network guardrails. We have to have identity guardrails. It is a different beast. Fundamentally, and this is maybe a little bit security nerdy, but I think the big change that happens with agentic AI is up until this point, there were only three types of devices that acted in enterprise networks or on any network. There were humans. They have a specific behavior profile. There were what we call workloads, but the things that power applications, those are your, you know, the apps. Mm-hmm. And then you had IoT devices like, you know, manufacturing floors and all that kind of stuff. And they all have very different profiles, different security characteristics. The introduction of AI agents sits somewhere in between a user and a workload. It's kind of predictable and kind of non-deterministic. And we're still figuring out exactly the right way to secure them. But they need to be treated with some level of seriousness around what are they theoretically capable of, what data, especially what data do they have access to that could potentially be served back to a client or a user, or can they be a bridge between multiple clients? We need to think about that. So yeah, they introduce a whole variety of security challenges, and that's another place where you've have already seen us deliver some innovation and continue to innovate is how can we monitor them? How can we trace them? How can we apply guardrails to them? How can we, you know, do a number of different things in that network security space that we tend to live in to help make sure that you can deliver agentic AI applications, but do them securely.
Yeah, I can tell you as a first-hand experience that sometimes as a software guy and software maker, the world is much simpler and more beautiful if you didn't need to be concerned about security.
So yes,
can really offer a much better software, and you could offer that much sooner, easier, if you know there was zero concern about security. So, for example, in our case, sometimes we go and just introduce some of these capabilities, as you mentioned, like agentic AI and those kind of things, that works beautifully when you are the global admin and there is no, you know, concern about security whatsoever.
Yep.
But then when you wanted to bring it to life for real users that they have some restrictions and you have to make sure that this agentic AI with full power on working with APIs behind the scene and making things happen magically can really be controlled, that's a totally different ballgame. And probably you would spend the same amount of time that you developed it even more just to make sure that now security is in place.
Yeah, so this is where partnering with the security teams is really, really important. And the message that, you know, I have one of the core parts of our mission statement as a company is how can I bring cloud teams and security teams together? Because at the end of the day, I think one of the challenges is that security tends to be the ones who say no to something. But really what we need to do is we need to figure out how we can, as security professionals, say yes, because mm-hmm. your point around delivering meaningful software to users, like we want that, right? Like we want to be able to deliver those experiences. So it's really, really important to consider early on and to partner with people who care about security in software development to make sure that you have those foundational architecture pieces correct. Because if you do, then you can actually move with velocity, right? If you take a little bit more time to design the foundational pieces correctly, it will actually allow you to move faster, safely down the road. But yes, it is.
Yeah.
It's a tension. And as a product person, like I said, I live it every day. And so I try to bring that sense to the product that we build, right? It's like, okay, how do I bring these teams together? How do I enable velocity with security?
And you raised a very good point that it needs to be that security expert and security advice and looking at it from architectural perspective as well, that needs to be in place from the start, because otherwise then you are at the end and you are in the never-ending battle of catching up and fixing versus you started from that point and you just had the right foundation that you could build upon that. So these are two different approaches that as a SaaS company, maybe we as SaaS companies, we should really look at, for example, hey, let's just look at it differently. Start from that and then build the right foundation rather than build it and then go back and try to fix it.
I think that's the ideal situation, but I will say it's really to me more about the partnership, mm-hmm. because the practicality is, I can say that. I can say you should start from scratch and consider security, but who on this podcast is starting from scratch? Maybe you started your new AI company like a lot of people are, right? And you're starting from scratch again, but most people are starting with a brownfield. And so there are good foundational principles that you can follow even after you have core elements of the software in place that can help deliver what we in the security world called compensating controls, right? So it's those foundational pieces that even if I make a mistake somewhere else, can I partner with the security team to make sure that I have the appropriate controls in place at a lower level that will keep us secure. So there's a lot of different approaches to it, but actually, like, the way that we think is, I try to recognize that everybody is dealing with a mess. Right. Who has a greenfield clean slate? Like, not a lot of people. If you do, you don't have a lot of revenue yet. So so where we try to live is in that empathy in the middle ground, where you're trying to deal with something that you either inherited or have been building, or you're trying to backpedal on. That's the important part, right? Anything can work in a greenfield. And so it is critical, again, going back to customer empathy, like you can't give up. There's a lot of different ways to focus on security. And if you get in at day one, great, that's awesome. But it doesn't mean that you can't continue to improve or build really core controls in after day one.
Okay. And then, I'm going to ask you also one question, from product management perspective that maybe it has less to do with, per se, just security. It can be, you could be at any field and still you would have that kind of, you know, perspective from product management perspective, that what is the kind of challenge that you have as a product manager to balance between maintaining what you have and adding more to the product and innovating? Because essentially you have to please both. You cannot stop on one and just pay attention to the other, because it's not going to work. If you are innovating only and not taking care of the maintaining what you have, it's going to cause some issues. But if you are just in the maintenance and fixing what you have and addressing the existing customers' need without taking care of the market and innovations coming to market, and it's never ending. It's just a dynamic market. So things are happening over there and you have to really take care of them. So how do you really, you know, balance between these two in your everyday work?
And it's even more challenging with AI software development, because I think what we will see is, you're already seeing it in almost any SaaS space, especially if you have an established product. The time to MVP for some competitor to pop up with a clean slate is significantly compressed, right? Mm-hmm. And it is a huge, huge challenge. So I think about it in a couple different ways. One of the first things is, all customer signal is good signal. So we try to pull in as much noise as possible. And one of the places where we've been really pushing innovation is on using AI. And there's a number of tools out there now to help product teams to analyze customer feedback with AI. But using AI, we've been doing it for 2 years now, using AI to dig into the backlog and try to extract thematic elements. Because the one thing that will kill you in maintaining an existing product is one-offs. I am not a huge believer in going to your top five customers and looking for all of the complaints that they have about your product and then checking them off one by one. So I tell my product management team, everything you bubble to the top needs to be a kill five birds with one stone item, right? It's looking at what is the fundamental thematic challenge. The second thing that I'll see is, it in many cases, customers are asking, they don't necessarily know. I mean, there's things like, hey, we're gonna fix this UI button, or I want to change this workflow, or something along those lines. But when they're asking for bigger features, understanding the why is critically important. Because I think oftentimes when the customer asks for a solution for something, They may have a kind of a traditional way of thinking about how it would be solved, but there may actually be an opportunity for innovation there, right? So if you understand the why a customer is asking for something, we can oftentimes blend and find really, really innovative ways to push the industry forward, to push the product forward while still serving our existing customer base. And then the last piece is you have to carve out space for innovation. So one of the most important, I would argue the most important relationship as a product team inside of an organization, and maybe this is because I come from a sales background and I've worked with customers so often that, you know, a lot of PMs will say, well, we all work for sales. Totally true. You want to have a great relationship with sales. They're going to be one of the best inputs, especially in B2B sales for your product roadmap. But given that I've spent a lot of time in sales, I have a really good understanding of what the process looks like. It doesn't take a lot of time for me to get aligned with sales. The partnership between product and engineering, in my opinion, is the most important part of being successful as in product, because at the end of the day, they're the ones that are delivering. And so I partner very closely with my engineering leader to make sure that we have development cycles and budget carved out explicitly for innovation. And that makes sure that in addition to all of the optimizations that we're trying to do with analyzing backlog and five birds with one stone and figuring out the whys, we also have space that's carved out for driving explicitly innovation, ring-fenced space, right? And so that allows us to kind of balance all the different pieces. Last thing I'll say there is, no, you're never going to please everybody. And one of my mentors, who has had a long career in product when I moved into product, said, nobody's ever going to be happy with you. You have to be comfortable saying no, and you have to be confident in the decisions that you're going to make. So the practicality is, if you are not comfortable saying no to a customer, you will find yourself stuck without any capacity for innovation. And it's a tough job. You know, a lot of the core business decisions are on you. But at the end of the day, you need to approach it with confidence. You need to approach it strategically, and you need to approach it by partnering with the other organizations.
Fantastic. And then my last question is about a book or a blog post that either personally or professionally you found it impactful in what you do, positively impacting. So
yeah,
if you could share with us.
So I'm going to give two. One's going to be producty and one's going to be security. One of my favorite product books is a book called Obviously Awesome by April Dunford, and it's about product positioning. And it talks a lot about how making sure that you understand the way that you're positioning your product competitively in the market, the way that you are, you know, what problems you're trying to solve, what value you're trying to deliver. You might have the exact same widget, but the way you position it makes a difference in terms of how competitive it is and how successful you are and how much you can charge for it and all of those kinds of things. So she's great. Had the privilege of working with her as well in several workshops that we've done in the past. But I think her book is really, really excellent, because it'll reframe, you know, just the importance of product positioning, not just the product that you're building, the tech. And then the second book that I'll recommend is more on the security front. It's a book called Sandworm. It's by a guy named Andy Greenberg. And it really speaks to the core problem that we are trying to solve at Aviatrix. It's super topical. It's about a nation state attack, one of the first nation state attacks that was destructive against private business and infrastructure, generally assumed to be created by Russia, and the target was Ukraine. And this is well before the invasion. And it is really fascinating about, and should be a call to action for most organizations to take cybersecurity very, very seriously. So it's a fascinating book. Definitely drives a lot of the ethical mission that we have here at Aviatrix, but also very interesting in the context of how technology and how cybersecurity are impactful to our daily lives.
Thank you very much, Chris. It was great having you. on this podcast. So I appreciate you taking the time to join us. And I hope as much as I enjoyed, everybody else also enjoyed and learned from this discussion.
Thank you, Arman.
Thank you for listening to SaaS Scaled with Arman Ashraghi. For show notes and any resources mentioned in today's episode, go to saasscaled.com. If you're enjoying our show, give us a 5-star review and share on LinkedIn. And be sure to subscribe for any updates on future episodes. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Curvey, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.